welcome back to the Centrish Kickers podcast. Welcome back to my closet. I'm your basic podcast host. A little information about the podcast. We are now partnering with the Ground Level podcast I do with one of my good buddies, Sean. You can find us anywhere you find podcasts, but also Rumble. So just another place to check out the centrist take, I guess. These podcasts will also be aired there as well as on my own private feed here at the Centrist Kickers. But Sean and I have some differing political views, but at the same time, some shared ones as concerned Americans about the political process and culture and blah, 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 and everything else. So if you want to see us spar a little bit and have a conversation, you can check us out on the Ground Level. But today, getting together with you, really just to talk about, I have this long view of the next few podcasts I really want to do. Just talking about this idea of reformation, which I know I've mentioned maybe in the past two episodes, about where this country's going, what we can do as individuals, what is going to be necessary. You know, some we always want to be privy to what is happening currently in our politics, but at the same time, as centrists, or at myself as a centrist, wanting to step back and place ourselves properly to react properly. And so a lot of what I'm going to talk about today is based out of a book I recently read. So this is not a book review podcast necessarily, but you're probably used to it at this point. Your basic podcast host reads a book and then needs to talk about it and how it's informed his political takes. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's good to inform ourselves and go down the rabbit holes as deeply as we dare. But this most recent book that I read was from a fellow podcaster on a much larger stature than myself, Andrew Heaton, who you will find at the Political Orphanage. That's his podcast, which I highly recommend checking out. But also, he does a podcast with two other podcast hosts, Justin. God, the other podcast host, they post politics, politics, politics. Why can't I remember Justin's name? Justin Robert Young, I think. Good Lord. He's like a black hole in my memory, and I can't remember who this guy is. But the other podcast host he hosts, We're Not Wrong With, is Jennifer Briney, who I've constantly recommended to my fellow listeners here, or not viewers, but who hosts her own podcast called Congressional Dish, which I cannot recommend enough. Whether you disagree with her politics or not is besides the point. She's all about the process of the American government, how Congress operates, the bills they pass, dissecting those bills, where your money's going, blah, 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 blah. She's amazing, and I highly recommend her podcast. But Andrew Heaton, I also recommend. He is the center-right member of that trifecta on We're Not Wrong. And I do say center-right because I don't view him as hard-right, but he's definitely more conservative. But the book he wrote, which I currently read recently, was Tribalism is Dumb, Where It Came From, How It Got So Bad, and What to Do About It. So I have a lot of sympathies for this book out the gate, mainly because, you might be able to guess, one, I'm a centrist, so tribalism is not anathema to me. I understand it. I also recognize that I am susceptible to it. So it's not this hurdle that's impossible to overcome, but it's more important that we, or better, maybe it's better to be said, it's a hurdle that's in front of all of us. Either you're going to sidestep it or you're going to jump over it. And it seems like the jumping over it has become the modus operandi, or the main way that people engage with their tribalism, and they see that hurdle and they jump over it to then triumph over the outside, the other, I guess, is a better way of saying it. The other, the in-group, the out-group, they want to triumph over the out-group. And as centrists, it seems like we want to sidestep it. It's like, oh, no, I'm not interested in triumphing over somebody or getting one over. I want to create the tent. Was like, well, yeah, we see this hurdle, but is it that much of a obstacle for us to actually come together and do things as humans, or I mean, maybe more realistically, is as a nation or even as a state? So that's my conundrum here. When I read this book, it reinforced a lot of the things I struggle with as far as our political and cultural environment currently, where you've heard me say it. I mean, I've said it so many times that religion, well, that's a whole other topic entirely, which I would love to talk about. But our politics has become a religion of a sense, this is going to sound shitty, but to dumb it down even further, it has become essentially like rooting for a sports team, which when you hear people say it, it seems to be common parlance these days where people go, oh yeah, it's like rooting for a team and this or that. And they sort of use it as a throwaway line and sort of dismiss its importance to how divisive our politics has become, which I don't think is arguable. It's clearly divisive. It's clearly one side against the other. It's clearly in group, out group, and the good guys and the bad guys, which is not a way politics should operate, in my opinion, as a centrist, right? I mean, we're trying to bring people under the larger tent to actually get things done. All the conservatives who want a sleek and efficient federal government, to all the progressives or lefties, supposedly lefties, you know, there's a gray area there, but we'll talk about that. But where they want government to be larger and provide more for people. That's like a basic structure. I should actually get into this book and read some things out of it. But anyways, to define some terms is what I'm trying to say. So it was troubling to me that it tickled so many of my fancies. Like it inspired me and was like, oh yes, this is exactly what I've been thinking and saying. And why can't people just see this? It is because that people use it as a throwaway line. Oh yeah, you're rooting for red team, or I'm rooting for blue team. And they sort of like, oh yeah, it's a sports team's thing, and it's something that people understand when they think about politics. And then they dive in and it's way more complicated and convoluted, and people don't understand how to navigate that system. So it just becomes easier for them to root for the team that they identify with more. And that's the problem, is like, you can't just identify with the team that you would gravitate towards. You need to, if you're going to be more of the humanist / centrist / nation, have a larger view of the world and politics in general, you need to understand what the other side is trying to say. And that they aren't necessarily an anathema to you. They aren't your enemy. They are someone you have to negotiate with and come to compromise with. But unfortunately, compromise is not a good word these days. Compromise is something that weak people do. It's something that rhinos do, or dinos do, or something along those lines. You have to be hard line in your party affiliation to get anywhere in politics these days. And that is where we break from everything else and become either independents or centrists. So let's dive into this a little bit. So we're going to read directly from Andrew Heaton's amazing book, Tribalism is Dumb. I hope he can forgive me, but I'm going to read this to sort of define the terms that he's working with and that I agree with, frankly. So I'm going to be reading for the first time here on this podcast. That's exciting stuff. You didn't know you're going to get an audiobook version, but I'm essentially going to read about two-ish pages of the book, sort of to define the terms that have divided us into these certain camps. And so So I hope Andrew Heaton can forgive me and hope this is okay. Hope I don't get copyrighted, all those other things. But I as far as negating any copyrights that might be coming my way, I highly recommend this book. And this is all from Andrew Heaton from page 58 of Tribalism is Dumb. Starting here, he goes, oh, and I'm going to go ahead and read the whole thing. He uses a lot of parentheses. He's a humorist, if you want to put it that way. So you might get a taste of some of his humor and his writing as I go on here. But and I don't know how well it's going to be communicated split from the rest of the book this way, but I hope you get it. It's still an amazing and fun read and encapsulates quite a bit of the issues we're dealing with. But we're starting here on page 58. In his brilliant book, The Three Languages of Politics, Talking Across the Political Divide, Arnold Kling identifies three patterns used to both understand and communicate politics: oppressor versus victim, civilization against barbarianism, and coercion versus voluntary. Parentheses, Kling later amended the book to include populists, which is outsiders versus establishment, and parentheses. Progressives understand the world as oppressor versus victim, and so communicate in those terms. MSNBC presents nearly every story as conflict between the strong and the weak, rich versus poor, privilege versus ethnic minority, patriarchy versus woman, summer person versus Harold Lobsterman. An old school socialist holds a view of rich people or oppressors exploiting poor people or victims. This is an economic and class-based interpretation of conflicts in America. Someone more socially justice-y is less interested in socioeconomics and more interested in identity politics. For them, conflicts are between the privileged, me, suited-up white guy, and minorities. While the variables differ, the equation remains the same, oppressor versus victim. Conservative thinking and communication is rooted in concern for civilization and its collapse. In the conservative worldview, society is organic and delicate and never safe from the forces working to upturn it, be they external forces like terrorists, immigrants, infidels, alien ideas or literal aliens, or internal moral atrophy, institutional collapse. Institutions such as family, pardon me, the Constitution, court systems, police, capitalism, churches, and so forth hold the tide of chaos at bay. Any stories on Fox News can be subheaded as civilization in peril. The conservative columnist Jonah Goldberg wrote the book Suicide of the West, How the Rebirth of Nationalism, Populism, and Identity Politics is Destroying American Democracy. The book's thesis deeply reflects the conservative heuristic that liberalism, democracy, and capitalism are munificent aberrations of history, and if we kick at their foundations too hard, Western civilization might lose these delicate, hard-fought institutions. Populism and unhinged progressivism threaten their very existence, which would slide into poverty and authoritarianism. Libertarians rely on coercive versus voluntary heuristic. When a libertarian watches a news story, they are sensitive to the use of force against an individual, which deprives them of agency. For libertarians, the world is all about the clash of liberty and tyranny. When libertarians watch a news story where something distasteful happens, but all parties voluntarily participated in the debacle, they're never entirely sure how it got on the news in the first place. Finally, populists see the world as a grudge match between sclerotic, self-serving core of elites and the trodden upon every man. Populists assume the establishment is hypocritical and has rigged the game against otherwise pure forgotten majority. Majority, excuse me. They tend to understand and communicate politics in terms of outsider versus insider, establishment versus insurgent, legacy media versus independent journalism, and a populist who leans Democrat may inveigh against Wall Street and corporate America, whereas a Republican populist is likely to implicate the political establishment in Washington, D.C., or the social establishment in Hollywood. I'm going to finish off here with this last paragraph. Going on from Andrew Heaton's book, Tribalism is Dumb. These dichotomies allow the sects to relay and rapidly sort through the information they find pertinent. Heuristics, The world has an infinite amount of information at any moment to sift through, so we depend on heuristics to prioritize data quickly, placing raw information into piles of relevance and insignificance. I think that kind of says a lot. It says almost everything about how we interpret political news, how we immediately fall into a camp of one of these four things that he gave us, the libertarian, populist, conservative, or progressive. And it's kind of eerie how easy it is to sort yourself into a camp based on, one, you're given information through a very funneled and controlled news apparatus these days. And then based on that information, you find yourself on a side. And I guess the idea is, and it's kind of been the thrust of this entire podcast, is to listen to every side. Very early on, I gave you a kind of a rundown of all the podcasts I listen to, just so you can kind of know that I'm trying to glean information from every single aspect of our political environment and all of the pundits and infotainment type podcasts and things that are out there to try to gin up our anger and essentially what I've come to realize since then, and what I sort of realized at the time, is that that's exactly what they were doing. They were putting you into a bucket and they wanted to keep drinking from that bucket. There's a thing called audience capture that every podcast is subject to, is where we start getting an audience, which I don't suspect this podcast ever will, because I'm not interested in audience. I really am not. I'm interested, one, this is just me spitting into the wind and venting. But at the same time, if you are looking for those things, and if you're listening to a major podcast, whether it be something from NPR or the Daily Wire or Fox News or the Wall Street Daily News thing, I mean, they have, there's literally, I'm assuming literally, millions of podcasts that you can choose from that you can get your information out of. And at some point, those podcasts recognize they have an audience and they need to maintain that audience. Well, what does that audience want? They want this sort of information. So this is how we're going to frame things. And that's why you're right. You can immediately turn this around on myself. This is something I'm always guilty of, is always trying to be humble in this sense, where I recognize that I'm already giving you the centrist take. Oh, listen to all these things. Come to a different conclusion. Be independent. I'm guilty of this. But I'm not trying to gin you up. And that's where these other podcasts, they fall victim to this, I believe, because they have a hard political view. And it's one thing to be ideological. Go ahead and be ideological. I think it's kind of boring if you're not, to a degree. But my ideology, and as centrist ideology, the way I define it in the modern terms, is I'm trying to bring everybody into a larger tent. It would be nice if it was a humanist tent, but ultimately, at this point in time, I don't see that as a reality. I would like it as a national tent. But even that, we're so divided right now, that's an uphill battle and maybe even impossible to attain, even though I honestly believe that's the goal of the American project, is to bring all types of humans from all different cultures, from all different belief backgrounds and faiths into one nation where they can make a nation work based on laws. Based on laws. That's the crux of this all. We all have to agree about what this country is going to do and how we're going to conduct ourselves based on law. And so you're right. You can say I'm audience captured as well. God, I wish I had one. But with all these different worldviews, how are we supposed to conduct ourselves in a unified way? Would we have all these different worldviews, right? I mean, you can't imagine that these four different segments of thought can cohesively come together and make things happen. So that is my endeavor, what I want to do in politics, if I have any voice at all, is to unite people under a larger tent. So when you look at how Andrew Heaton, in the great book, Tribalism is Dumb, identifies progressives as the understanding of the world as oppressor versus victim, you sort of get like, well, okay, I might bristle immediately at those terms, but let's put them in different terms. Let's put them in like, well, the powerful versus the powerless, not oppressor versus victim, but the powerful versus the powerless. That is something as a centrist, I can go, okay, well, I can see that. I can see that a little more easily than oppressor. It was a much more harsh term versus victim, making it seem like you're absolutely helpless. So, you can say I'm nerfing the terms. I'm making them softer and more palatable. But at the same time, I'm trying to get to the truth that underlies these worldviews, because there is truth in all of them. And that's the sad part that no one wants to acknowledge. And that's what makes us tribal, is we don't want to acknowledge that this other side actually has something to say. They're just the enemy. They're the bad guys, or they're my political opponent. They're the other team. But when you say powerful versus powerless, people kind of, I think that's a little more, yeah, I get it. I can see that. There's people who have billions of dollars. There's people who are, in fact, our system is even set up on, as a republic, not a pure democracy, to give power to our representatives, to represent us. And essentially, they're the ones where, hey, we're going to give you more power so you can give us the power, so you can hear where we're coming from, because you rely on our vote to then go do what we're asking you to do, to give you a mandate, right? This is where their power is supposed to come from the power of the governed, right? But I wish that were the case, but it often isn't, sadly. But if you look at the progressive mindset from that perspective, it's easy to say, okay, they got a point. They got a point. And then you go look at the socialist worldview, where they look at it more as a... The sad part is that the progressives tend to atomize these definitions, where the oppressor becomes a man, or they become simply the wealthy, or they become these other things that are too specific. Power is enough. You always should be fighting. As Americans, that seems like our modus operandi is we're supposed to be fighting against centralized power. No, we want the power to be devolved from the people, and the people are a wild diaspora from all over the planet at this point. I mean, it used to be, given on our history, you could say that it's diverse based solely out of Europe, because Europe was not the same. So if you're looking at strictly white people, but that has obviously expanded to Latinos and Asian Americans, and obviously African Americans or Black Americans who have come here or were brought here and who have since immigrated. But the point being is, when you start breaking it down into racial stuff, you get lost. You lose all the thrust of meaning and power behind what you're talking about when you talk about power. Who has power? And if you even identify those people in power as, oh, they're mostly white, well, you're missing the point. You're missing the point of the power itself. That's what you should be focusing on. Everything else, you're easily going to get lost and further divide everybody, which is what we're trying to get away from as centrists. We want to be more united centrally. We want the people to be the center of power, not a far off disembodied federal government, or even a state government, if that's where your state's at, unfortunately. California, Washington, looking at you. But if you could do those things, you make fighting power easier, which is ultimately what progressives want. They want to make fighting the truly empowered easier to do. And that, to me, is a laudable goal. When you frame it like that, it's easier for people to ingest. And while Heaton goes on to narrow this viewpoint down to the socialist viewpoint, where it's, you know, the rich versus the poor specifically, it's still, you know, he claims it comes down to the same thing, oppressor versus victim, which is an entirely other economic argument, but one I'm not necessarily unsympathetic to, because I think that's becoming more and more clear the way the oligarchy has taken control of our political process, that's something that should be at least recognized. Like, that's something you can combat against. It's centralized power, centralized wealth, and that bleeds right into the conservative viewpoint, where it seems to be more and more outward in their concerns as far as other things trying to tear down civilization. I don't I feel conservatives have this. It's weird to say that an entire viewpoint is based solely on. There's fear is injected into all of these things, all of these worldviews we're talking about here. The progressives, obviously, their fear is that the oppressor is oppressing them and that they have no control over their lives. So they lack agency based on an outside or a distribution of power that is unfair. So they want the distribution of power to be completely even or teeter-totter in a way where they have a little more power, which I feel is laudable. The powerless always want more power. Or in the system we have at our fingertips, this republic that we are gifted by the forefathers, that's supposed to be how it works. The power is supposed to come from the governed, right? We're the governed, but we choose the people who represent us. Whereas the conservative worldview seems to be power from, or they're afraid of the outside influence, so they're going to lose power based on other people tearing down the system that we have, and that everything that we hold dear could be thrown up into the wind through war and revolution and everything else, or just cultural upheaval. And that's, once again, it seems obvious why they would fear and hate progressives so much, because unfortunately, progressives have had been seduced by a lot of identity politics and cultural stuff, which was spit out, frankly, in this last election. You can go back a couple podcasts. I made a whole episode about that, and which I actually agree with to some extent. Not that I'm a conservative in that sense, but that's where my conservatism kicks in. Is like, you're telling people how to live their lives and telling them how to speak and telling them all about essential fundamentals that don't line up with everything that we've known for hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. Doesn't mean we haven't made progress in those areas as far as racial acceptance, gender acceptance, you know, and all those things. But at the same time, you can't tell me to turn the world on its head simply because you think it's time that these quote unquote powerless people now need to be in full power see, this is delicate, but whatever. You know what I'm trying to say. Go ahead and have a trans representative. I don't care. I would vote for them if they were speaking the right political things. But if their politics is simply about their identity, I'm sorry, I lose interest. Not because I don't share their identity. I shouldn't have to share their identity. They can be a brand new American right off the bus from Guantanamo. Guantanamo Bay? That is not what I meant to say. Guatemala or Grenada or any of these other countries. If you got your citizenship and you can be representative, which I don't know what the federal law on that is, but I would vote for you as long as you're saying the right political things. But unfortunately, it seems like conservatives feel like that sort of movement somehow tears away from their power. It's one thing the left always gets right. It is always about a power play. So closely linked to the conservative viewpoint about all of civilization tumbling around about their ears is the libertarians, where they would go, well, who's in charge? What power are we talking about? Are people being forced to do a thing, or is it voluntary? So it's all about your individual agency, which once again ultimately ties right into, this is the weird thing that I wish people would start connecting more. Maybe I'm just out on the fucking range here. But powerless versus powerful, coercive versus voluntary. You want to be able to have power, voluntary power. So you can link libertarianism right to progressivism in that way. It's all about, who are we fighting against? We're fighting against either centralized power, or we're fighting against for individual power. Individual to be, wave a rainbow flag and do what you want to do with in your personal life? Sure, why not? But you shouldn't be coerced into that. That's the problem. I shouldn't be coerced into putting pronouns in my thing, or voting for a specific candidate, or being badmouthed by some Ku Klux Klan member because I'm supporting the black candidate in Georgia, right? These are things that should not be happening. So once again, you're looking at all these different worldviews, and it's all about power and choice and individual autonomy. And once again, this is what's frustrating to me, is like, why are we so tribal when, in a way, we're fighting about the same thing? We're not all that different. But people need to give up the ghost on some of these nonsense issues, like the cultural stuff, They need to give up, conservatives need to give up the fear that civilization is going to come down around their ears because someone in California decided to be okay with the transing of their kids, right? That is not, it doesn't affect you. You have power and agency over yourself, and that's it. The idea that you want to enforce your power and agency that you see for yourself and your family and maybe even your community, if you're that lucky to have that much influence, the fact that you want to make that some sort of federal program and dictate how other people live their lives is never okay, whether it comes from the left or the right. That's the problem. And once again, it gets into that whole states' rights versus federal thing, because everyone's fighting over the federal government right now. Make no mistake about it. That's what this is all about. It's about absolute control. And once again, power. Power to dictate. And here we are supposed to be run by the laws that we all agree upon, but we can't even agree upon the fundamentals anymore. And that's where this tribalism kicks in. It kicks in based on like, well, yeah, we can agree that the law is the law, murder is wrong, blah, blah, blah. These very basic things. But when it comes to bodily autonomy for women's rights, the right to choose whether you want a certain pronouns, whether you want to be referred to a certain way, what you want to do with your body, this is where we start coming apart. And so let's move on. The populists, the libertarians, coercive versus voluntary. I'm looking at the book here again. Once again, the book is Tribalism is Dumb. I'm going to keep saying that because I'm pulling a lot of information out of this, really out of just two pages. It's a quick read. It's an enjoyable read. Andrew Heaton is amazing and a political humorist. But I definitely recommend checking it out. But I just want to keep dropping that in there because I'm reading out of his book, literally. So I got to give credit where credit is due. The populist part is the one that it's less defined, because you can kind of get populist in any of the things that I just mentioned, whether it be libertarianism, conservatism, or progressivism. There's a populist angle to all of it. And that's really just, once again, circles back to power, because why wouldn't it? It's insider versus outsider is the populist. So the insider would obviously be your lifelong representative in Congress or a presidency. Granted, you can't be lifelong in presidency, but who knows if it will last, given Trump and some of his sycophants are already trying to see if he can run for a third term. But you're going to need a constitutional amendment for that, another topic entirely. But the populist angle is really just, well, who's in control? Who's been in control? And if you've been in control this long, why aren't things getting better for us? And then when they're not getting better for us, which is clearly the case right now, the populist angle is, well, get the hell out of here. We're the outsiders now. You've literally placed us as the powerless. The powerless, once again, now mirrors the outsider. We don't have control. Who are you actually representing? We elected you to represent us, but you're not serving us. The government is not serving us. That is why trust in the federal government is at an all-time low and will continue to be an all-time low until they actually do something about it. So, what have we learned? Tribalism is dumb. Thank you, Andrew Heaton. The reason that I gravitated towards this book like a moth towards a flame is this has always been like at the back of my mind, and it should maybe be more at the forefront. Because current politics with Trump in office, you get to the point where you need to wait a week, 2 weeks, a month, 2 months to really see how his chaos is going to pan out. It's another reason why I don't do this podcast even weekly, because I need to see what's happening. And when I get news or something does come down the pike, I'm always like, well, I got to respond to that. I have immediate opinions. But why would you have an immediate opinion when you don't know the result yet? I see a lot of things that Trump's doing right now, specifically through Doge, which is constantly in the news these days, where I hesitate because I want to go, whoa, 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 whoa. No one elected Elon Musk. Well, I recognize we elected Trump, and Trump's going to do what he's going to do as far as appointees with Tulsi Gabbard and RFK and all these other things that people might disagree with, but that's his prerogative. He's the president. He was elected, whether you want to admit it or not, he was. And so when I see Doge and what they're doing, you're an unelected bureaucrat, essentially, dictating how government is run. And that's my problem, is like, well, you're centralizing more power. Who are you centralizing power towards? Whose hands is it falling into? And you go, well, it's Trump. He's elected. That's okay. That's the will of the governed. No, I would say, well, yeah, to an extent, but how long is Elon Musk going to be running Doge? How many lives is he going to affect? What downstream effects are his choices going to have on the economy, which affects everybody, which essentially it seems like what his main goal is, to affect the economy, make government more efficient. Hopefully you'd like to think you're going to return money to working people's hands by making the government more efficient. We'll see what happens there. There's been rumors around Doge checks going out. We'll see what happens there. Once again, the news is constant, but you have to step back and go, well, how do I actually feel about this? What is this actually doing for me? What is it doing for the country? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And what ultimately will somebody else do with this power? Because once you start centralizing more power, it doesn't go away, especially in the system we have now, which is does not move. It moves like a glacier. It moves hardly at all. You can't even see it unless it's melting, which you can say, oh, Doge just, you know, is melting it. It's changing things for the better, blah, 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 blah. We don't know that. We don't know until a year from now. We won't know. I would love to see what happens in the midterms, but good Lord, who knows what Trump's going to be able to accomplish after he loses Congress. If that happens. But right now, Elon Musk is totally underwater. No one likes Musk personally. No one likes, or they're at least concerned about the direction Doge is taking. Rightfully so. It's this new, I don't even know what to call it, a department. There was an episode a couple episodes ago on We're Not Wrong, where Jennifer Briony immediately, amazingly laid out the difference between departments and not administration. I'm forgetting the other word. Good Lord. I'm only one man. But there's a definition where there's a certain body that has to be elected and put in place. I think it's like departments. Yeah, there it is. Departments. And so Doge is not actually an official department, because I think that has to be ratified by Congress, where Doge is technically, despite the name, is actually an agency, I think is the right word. So it's an agency that is now framing itself as a department within the executive branch, because you have the Department of Energy, you have the Department of Education, you have all these other things that fall under the executive branch. Well, no one actually ratified a Department of Government Efficiency. It's just something that Trump put in place. So I think it's an agency. Anyways, that's a long way of saying it's still like this unofficial body. But my issue for conservatives are like, okay, this is, they're helping ensure civilization. They're helping secure the fact that the government is running more efficiently. They're securing the fact that the government is actually doing the will of the people, which would be a laudable goal. However, do they have that actual constitutional power? We're going to find out. They've already had an injunction. I don't know if that's the right word, but a judge has already come down saying, hey, you can't do these things. And now they're like, well, we'll see. We're going to keep a delaying action going. We're going to see what happens. And, you know, we're just playing the waiting game to find out, because this is eventually going to go to the Supreme Court. You know, it's going to. There's no way around it. If Democrats have any backbone, they're going to fight this to at least make sure it's legal. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the thing, is like, oh, you're fighting it. This gets back to the tribalism argument. You can't just go, it's Trump's doing it and Elon's his guy, so it must be okay. That is a tribal way of thinking. You must adhere to the laws that we have that dictate how all of us are supposed to convey ourselves in this republic. And so as uncomfortable as that might be, because it's going against your team, it's like saying, well, the quarterback needed to throw an interception on this play because justify it somehow, even though you should never throw an interception. Turnovers are the bane of a football team's existence. But that's kind of what I'm saying. You have to step back and go, I don't want to be a team player here. I want to be a country player. Bigger tent. Think outside your tribal views. Once again, that's the goal of this whole podcast. I highly recommend this book, Tribalism is Dumb, by Andrew Heaton, where it came from, how it got so bad, and what to do about it. I guess my podcast is sort of, it's in line with this. It's like what we're doing about it is trying to step back, trying to disassociate yourselves from the religions of politics, the teams of politics. I'm throwing up scare quotes when I say those things. Be religious, have your teams. That's fine. I don't even necessarily agree with the founders or some of them. I believe John Adams was very anti-partisan, but at the same time, if it's a natural part of what it means to be a human being, we're going to fall into them one way or the other. It's inevitable. So the decision is as an individual and as a communities to then go, okay, recognize that you're part of a team, but at least be open. At least recognize the similarities that you have with people who have different who are fighting for different political outcomes, right? That's the point. It's to find the similarities, not to calcify the differences to a point where they become the outgroup. There is no outgroup when it comes to nation building. We're all supposed to be in this together. And as hard as that is to admit, that you can look across at the pink hair next to you or the guy wearing flannel and a MAGA hat, that this is the person, these are your countrymen. And that's a bitter pill to swallow, but you have to swallow it. Take your fucking medicine. And ultimately, that's the goal. That's how you diffuse this tribalism that we're living through. And will that actually help? I don't know how any of this is going to work. I'm worried about another housing bubble. I'm worried about the price of eggs. I'm worried about rent going up for people. Those are the things I'm worried about. You can paint me in all sorts of different circles with just those admissions. You can say I'm some sort of weird socialist or something like that. You can say I'm a conservative when it comes to cultural stuff. I don't want to be labeled. Fuck your labels. Get the labels out of your head. When you start complaining about other Americans, you're complaining about yourself in some weird way. You have a weakness or a blind spot you're not admitting to. And it's time to start admitting to it, because that is the only way we actually are able to unify. Because the one thing that tribalism will do, it will divide us. And once you start cheering and sneering and jeering at another group of Americans, we are divided. And we are, therefore, what's the opposite of divided? We are not united. And that is what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be the United States of America through all the differences, through language barriers, cultural differences. You know, one thing I've always had an argument with my partner, Sean, over at the ground level is these like Little Italy and Little Somalia and Koreatown and China and Chinatown. These things, these other places in America where you drive through and you're like, what is happening right now? Where am I at? I can't even read most of the signs along the side of the road because they're all in Korean. Or something. And I'm like, okay, well, the concern is like, oh, how are we supposed to be a homogenous culture when there's these other, well, are you telling me, look back into history. There was always Little Italy's. There were Little Ireland's. New York still deals with cultural divide in New York. It's been the basis of their politics since the founding, since the revolution, since the Civil War, since always. That's been New York's politics. That's why it's such a fascinating thing when you ever dive into New York politics, the city of New York, not the state, the city of New York, that has been so divided along cultural lines. But the other thing is, like, I'd always go, well, if I wanted to go buy lutefisk here in Washington State, where would I go? And anyone who comes from Washington knows, well, you'd probably want to go out to the peninsula, out in the Olympic Peninsula here in Washington. That's where all the Scandinavians go. That's where they live. Is that some weird cultural bubble that is okay, is acceptable because they're Scandinavians? Or is it anathema to what it means to be the United States? Or is it the beauty of the United States, that our diversity gives us strength, is the progressive mantra a lot of the time. But the beauty of it is those Scandinavians, I guarantee they don't look at themselves as Scandinavian American or Norwegian American or Swedish Americans. They're Americans, but they hold true to their Scandinavian heritage. So why would I look at anyone who comes from Somalia or comes from Jamaica or comes from or is blasting their Latino polka music down the street in their truck? Why would I look at them any different? I shouldn't, and I wouldn't, and I won't. They're Americans, plain and simple. So I have a lot of concerns that people are continue to fuel tribal differences, and they fuel, and the tribalism boils down, sadly, it boils down to that racial nonsense at some point, where it's like, oh, you look different, or you have a different culture, or even a different language, and so therefore you're what, not American? No. The American project is to ingest all of these people, is to be the most, the humanist bastion of the fucking planet. That's what America is supposed to be. That's my view of it anyways. I mean, sadly enough for the Native Americans, God forbid we talk about them. Ugh. Anyway, it just breaks my heart. That's why I said it that way. It breaks my heart because I realize that my goals and my aspirations for humanity is based on the genocide of a people. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. It's always that they're the forgotten people. They're the true forgotten people of America. Sorry, Black Americans, I love you, but you came up to a point, you've totally dominated the American culture since at least the 80s, and you could argue before that, musically, like I said, culturally, everything else is like, you've style, fashion, everything else. It's like, but the Native Americans, they've never had their day. Never had their day. So my heart, it goes out to them. Good Lord. And that seems very dismissive. I'm sorry, my tone when I talk about that, but it is true. It's sad. And so here I am talking about what I want this land to be, recognizing, oh, Jesus, I just gave a land acknowledgement that's where we came from. We got this land based on fucking over a lot of people. Anyways, but ultimately it can, let me try to spin this. It can ultimately be towards a good. And for all my Native American brothers and sisters out there, I hope you can at least recognize that that's my goal, is to, for humanity to better itself through this land that we took. And ultimately start recognizing that the planet we live on is for all of us. The planet is for humanity, and we got it in our hands to do what we want with it. And God forbid we keep getting divided along these tribal lines, because sadly, and this is where I'm going to circle all the way back around to the beginning, the Reformation needs to happen. The Reformation of America has to happen. And ultimately, whatever political camp you fall into, it comes down to one thing: the powerless versus the powerful. So the progressives, in a way, have it right, because you can look at it through the coerced versus agency, and you can look at it the conservative mindset is who's actually tearing down the country is never the powerless. The powerless aren't tearing shit apart. And if they are tearing shit apart, it's because they have no power. The centralized, centrist, middle of the road camp is about facing power. That's what this is about. That's what this podcast is ultimately going to be about going forward, in a way, because that's what the founders wanted us to do. Who are they fighting against? You could say they were the powerful in their way. They were slave owners. They were generally wealthy men, generally. That's why Thomas Paine, my man, but generally influential and powerful individuals in their own right. But they were fighting against a king. They were fighting against aristocracy and an oligarchy in all the senses of the word of that time. And so isn't that always the political struggle? Isn't that always what things are supposed to be about? You can even say the progressives were right. Well, so-and-so of this skin color had this amount of power back then, blah, 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 and it transferred down to now. Yeah, it's all interesting and everything, but you're still going to be talking down to a lot of people. That's where identity politics falls apart, is you need people who look like your envisioned oppressor behind you to actually fight real fucking power, real power. And whatever those people look like, those people in power, it doesn't matter. It's about the power that they have to corrupt our government, to make things happen for their benefit. This is why I'm very ambivalent about Doge, very ambivalent about the direction the country is taking. I don't believe Trump has the small man in heart and mind. when it comes to these things. Yes, you might get a few scraps from the table, but you're never going to get a seat at the table. Not in my mind. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any inkling that we're moving in that direction at all. So anyways, rambling now, I guess, but that's where I'm at right now. Ultimately, tribal is dumb. Tribalism is dumb. I agree with you, Mr. Heaton. Go check out The Political Orphanage. Go check out We're Not Wrong. I did read from his book extensively. The book is Tribalism is Dumb, where it came from, how it got so bad, and what to do about it. I read from page 58 all the way through the middle of 60. Highly recommend reading the book. And really, stay in touch with politics, but also take a step back. Stay in touch, step back, gather your feelings. It's never as bad as you think it is until it is. But start making those connections. And how you make those connections is talk more about politics and do it in a non-tribalistic way. Hear what people have to say. Find common ground with them. That's the centrist motivation. Find that common ground, because I'm telling you, when you start doing that, it will come back to those basics. We are fighting against people more powerful than us. So call me a progressive if you want. That's fine. I'll take that. But you know what I am? I'm still in the center, because I can fight against conservatives. I can fight against libertarians. I can fight against monarchists, whatever. It's about giving power to the individual, giving as much agency and, or dare I say the word again, power to people who don't have it. And more in this country, we're feeling like we're left out. We don't have a voice. Or if we have a voice, we're just shouting into the wind. Oh, just like this podcast. Anyways, call your mom. Call your dad. I hope you still have them. If you don't, call a friend. Talk to your coworkers. Talk to people who are different than you. And always be kind. Always be nice. Go out in the world, spread some joy, spread some positivity. Politics, it's unnerving, it's infuriating, but ultimately it's still only part of your life, and you got to go on living it, and you got to live it the best way you possibly can, and love yourself and find love, man. Just go be you. I don't know. Let go. And enjoy the wild ride we're on. We live in special times, and hopefully it comes out for the better. I still have hope, and you should too. And with that, I'm signing off. Love you all.